The next case is Glover versus Glover. We will give the students a little time to, some of them are filing out. Don't take it personally.
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Whenever you're ready, counsel.
May it please the court, Bryn Kuhn and Haley Cannon on behalf of the plaintiff and appellant in this case, Sarah Glover. This case pertains to a modification after a divorce decree entered in the District Court of Sarpy County, Nebraska, as it pertains to a three-year-old minor. The district court granted a divorce in this case, and shortly after the divorce, it was the plaintiff, my client, who filed a request for removal to remove the minor child from the state of Nebraska to the states of Oregon and Washington, specifically the Vancouver area, which borders on both states. Because it was a modification, in order to meet the necessary burdens, the plaintiff is required to show that there's a material change of circumstances not contemplated by the parties, which would otherwise warrant a modification of the decree.
Well, counsel, let's talk about that first, if you will. So you did plead it as a complaint to modify the original decree, right?
That is correct.
And then the court required you to be more specific about that. But you're the you represent the custodial parent. You're filing on her behalf.
Yes.
And what you're seeking is removal. Is it necessary to show a modification when you're not asking that the custody be modified?
Well, the way I read the case is that yes, that you're going to have to, you have to still show that there's a material change of circumstances.
Isn't that if you're the non-custodial parent? Isn't that what our case law says?
Well, in this particular case, I guess I've always felt that when you have a modification based on the law, the first burden is placed on you, even though that yes, she does have custody of the child. That's not changing the custody, but because it's a modification of a prior court order, that burden still is placed on the party that is requesting a change with regard to the prior court order.
Well, I guess I'm trying to help you out here a little bit in that.
I understand that.
You filed the complaint shortly after the decree was entered, which ended up being one of the facts that the district court held against your client.
Correct.
But what could have been changed in those, I think it was 2 months? What could have been a material change of circumstances at that point?
Well, first of all, this is a unique situation wherein, unfortunately, it was supposed to be dealt with at the time of the original divorce, but it wasn't because of a sanction due to a violation of the rules pertaining to discovery. And so the court indicated that they would hear the divorce, but the court would not hear the issues with regard to the modification in this case. And so that is part of what the issue was. It was the plan for, hopefully, for the mother to remove the child to the Vancouver area, but she wasn't able to bring that because of a technical violation as it pertained to discovery in this case. So ultimately, after the decree was entered, she filed a motion with the court, or a complaint with the court to modify that decree, allowing her the opportunity to remove the case, or to remove the child out of the state of Nebraska. And specifically, the court indicated in its decision that there was no testimony was going to be taken with regard to that modification, and it was denied without prejudice. And so it was the position of the plaintiff that she had the opportunity now afterwards to come in and file her complaint to modify and seek removal of the minor child from Nebraska. In doing so, under the Jack v. Clinton case and their progeny, she's required to show, one, there's a legitimate reason to be able to do that. The legitimate reason that was pled in that case was the first one was that she had a job opportunity available to her with monetary enhancements, as well as she has family and support that she had available to her in the Vancouver area. Her parents, while this divorce was going on, were providing assistance to her, but they were intending to move back to the home state where they were from, and so with her being here in Nebraska, she didn't have any family or anyone else, and she wanted to move back so she could have that support with her family. And in the case of Kowalski versus Kowalski, the court has said, when you have enhancements in income and career opportunities, and you have to moving a child from one jurisdiction to another on the basis of family opportunities, you know, for support and so forth, those are legitimate interests for purposes of meeting the first threshold.
And counsel, can I stop you there for a minute on the legitimate interest for new employment? The case law says you don't, a parent doesn't have to exhaust all measures to try and find a job within the state. But do they have to exert some effort to find a job within the state?
I think that that's reasonable to require the party to be able to do that. And in this particular case, keep in mind that my client originally came from Oregon to Nebraska. She worked at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, NICU unit, for several years. And before she went out looking at other jobs, she indicated that she checked with someone that she had previously worked with at the NICU unit to find out what the going rate was. And the going rate wasn't anywhere close to what the rate was in the Oregon-Washington area. Here in Nebraska, they were paying about $34 an hour, and in Washington, they were paying just shy of $60 an hour. Also, the job opportunity in Oregon-Washington allowed for her to be able to work on a 60-hour basis as opposed to an 80-hour basis that she had to work here in Nebraska in order to make ends meet and to pay the bills as they came due, giving her more time to spend with the child and to have a better quality of life for the child. And that was testified to at the time of trial.
And do I understand the trial judge's rationale in finding that she failed to prove a legitimate reason to move, that she was attempting to move to frustrate the father's parenting time?
In this decision, there were the judge went on to talk about these aggravating factors, things that the judge said that should have been considered for purposes of deciding whether to grant this removal or not. Part of the aggravating factors was the fact that my client chose to exercise her rights after the entry of a decree by filing a motion for new trial or motion to alter, amend, by coming in and saying, hey, you know, I now have full responsibility of this child. I have to work an 80-hour work week, and I have to provide the child for 3 telephone calls per week. That's a very, you know, big burden to put on me. In this particular case, because I have all of these responsibilities, I would like to reduce it to 2 times per week. And the court, if you read in its decision on the order of modification, seems to think that that is all her attempt to frustrate the amount of time that he's getting to spend with the child. But keep in mind, he's where he is because of the choices he made. And that's the frustrating part for my client is that you know, she's being asked to do all of these things, and the court seems to imply that because she's being asked to do these things and she wants to reduce those obligations because of all that's been put on her plate, that is somehow taking away his rights. And you know, again, he's where he is, and he's not with the child because of the choices he made.
Are we getting close to making a credibility call, though?
Well, I understand the case law. The judge gets to observe the witnesses and hear the testimony and decide who's credible and who's not credible and all of that kind of thing. I get that, but you know, one of the things that the judge talks about it in the decision about aggravating factors has to do with the phone calls. And the evidence showed that really there was only one phone call that was at an issue, and that was an Easter holiday phone call. And he really only, and it was, he had 3 phone calls that week. He thought he was supposed to get 4 because of the holiday. And he himself, in his testimony, said it was because of a misunderstanding.
But weren't there also issues about the mother having the child at other activities at the time of phone call, and therefore the child didn't want to participate?
But remember that we're dealing with a 3-year-old child, very short attention span, and are they supposed to spend all of their time sitting at home waiting for the call versus being involved in swimming or being involved in some activity or going to the pool or go seeing friends or doing all of these things. Is that what she's required to do, is just to sit and wait? Because he himself said he didn't know when he was going to be able to call because of the way the phone system worked in that where he was located.
Right. Before you run out of time, I want to make sure I get your answer to this question. So as it, you know, normally the rub in these in removal cases is, you know, a parent wants to move because they're saying, at least they say, they're pursuing a better opportunity. But the rub is the non-custodial parent and the impact that that will have. That's greater distance away, frustrates all of that. But here we have a different scenario, right? This individual is where he is, and he can only, the child can reach him by phone three times a week. Does the court look at the way the situation is currently as it relates to that? Or is it forward looking, saying, well, he'll be out in 2-3 years and we have to take that into consideration? I want to know your view on that.
The court, I think at both. I think the court has to look at what is the present situation and what is the future. It has to look at both situations, because part of the analysis in the best interest is how this is going to affect the child. Okay? How is it going to affect the child today versus how it's going to affect the child in the future? And if I just may, I want to say that I think Sarah has said it probably best in this case. And that is, although it was Paul who was the one that committed the criminal act by having possession of pornography, it's Sarah that's serving the sentence in Nebraska. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
May it please the court. My name is Caitlin Lovell, and I represent the appellee, Paul Glover. And as I'm sure the court is already aware, the issues in this case are really very straightforward. The only question is whether the district court abused its discretion in denying the appellant's request to remove the child. As far as the modification goes, and I know it's a little bit of a tricky issue here in this case, whether it's a modification or maybe possibly a standalone complaint to remove. But if we analyze it as a modification, there's two issues that really stick out. First, the appellant did not prove that the physical location of her family or her friends had changed between the time that the original decree was entered and then the time that she filed the complaint to modify.
So I'll go back and ask you the same question as I started with your opposing counsel. In this case where the appellant is the custodial parent, she's not asking for a change in custody. She's simply asking for removal, which was contemplated, I think, by the trial court at the time of the decree. Was it error for the court to require her to prove a material change in circumstances and then find that there hadn't been one?
No, I don't believe it was. And the whole reason, and I know this came up when we filed the motion to dismiss after she had filed the initial complaint to remove. And we based our argument on the fact that the appellant's counsel had expressly asked for a modification. I think if they hadn't asked for a modification, we probably wouldn't have raised that issue. But then that also dovetails into this issue that we raised in our brief, whether the procedural defect in the appellant's complaint makes a difference in this case. And we think that it does. The court was very explicit in the order that it entered, I believe on May 6th of 2021. The court required the appellant to identify what that material change in circumstances was so we could defend that. And for whatever reason, the appellant simply just alleged a blanket material change in circumstances and nothing specifically. So it's our position today that any material change in circumstances that the appellant is now arguing is being raised for the first time on appeal. And we don't believe that it's this court's position to consider those arguments because they weren't raised at the trial level. And most importantly, I think, and this goes to whether it's a modification or a request to remove, any financial benefit available to the appellant in moving to Oregon is completely speculative. The only evidence that she proved, she did have a job offer for a job that would allow her to work less hours and make more money, but that's it. She provided no evidence as to how much an apartment would cost.
Didn't she have testimony as to what a two-bedroom apartment would be?
Yes, and I did believe she may have had some, but then she also testified that if she were allowed to move, she would first live with some family members.
Because this apartment wasn't available till December. Wasn't that her reason? So didn't she say an apartment is whatever the number was, 1,000 whatever, mm-hmm. and it's a two-bedroom apartment, but it's not going to be available before December, so I'm going to live with my aunt and uncle until then?
Yes. And but she didn't provide any evidence as to what a daycare would cost. I believe she had narrowed it down to two, but I don't know that they had chosen a daycare.
Well, she had chosen a preschool and testified that she wouldn't need much daycare because she's going to be working these overnight hours and she would have family support there.
Right. But she did not provide any testimony as to any other expenses that you would expect, whether utilities would be more expensive, things like gasoline, car insurance, all of the other things that would go along with that.
Does the case law require that kind of detail?
I don't know that it requires that specificity of detail, but I do believe that it requires some, and we just don't believe that she provided enough evidence to prove that that potential financial enhancement really was an enhancement. We don't believe that it was an abuse of discretion for the judge to find that she did not.
So I'm going to get back into my question again. So when we performed the balancing analysis here, what adverse impact was there on your client at this point in time for that removal? How did that adversely impact him now, and how forward-looking do we have to look as it relates to his circumstances now as it relates to the removal?
I think we do need to look, and it is unique that he's not the custodial parent right now.
Right.
But I do think we need to look forward, and that's the Steffi versus Steffi case that we cited in our brief. I believe in that case, I believe that was in Omaha. The parents were originally divorced in Omaha. The mother was a colonel in the Army, and she was moved from Omaha, I believe, out to Kentucky. And then after she had moved out to Kentucky, her ex-husband filed a complaint to remove, to take the child down to Texas. And of course, the mother opposed that move. And the court did find the mother was set to retire in 2 years from the military, and she had planned on moving back to Omaha after she retired. And she planned on exercising more visitation with the child after retirement. And the court found that because it would interfere with her parenting time in the future, that was a basis to deny the complaint to remove. I believe that's very similar to what we have here. I mean, really, his date for home confinement is September 9th, 2023, so less than a year from today. And then as of January 10th, 2024, he has a full release date. So really, that's not much time at all. That's less time than the 2 years.
Would you agree in this first year, it's a minimal impact on him because of the circumstances, but if we can reach out that far, then you start to look at, and perhaps there's more inconvenience associated with that distance.
Yes, and part of the problem that we've had throughout this entire case and what the district court, I think, discussed extensively in their order is the mother's continued interference with my client's parenting time. So even though he's only entitled to 45 minutes a week, as much as the appellant wants to say that that's a burden, most people watch more than 45 minutes of TV per day. That's not very much when you consider it throughout an entire week. But the problem that we've had, she has interfered or just outright denied him his parenting time.
As I recall his testimony at the trial, at that time he said, yes, he was getting his 3 telephone visits every week.
And he did testify as to at least 5 specific instances where he had called to exercise his parenting time, and the appellant just didn't pick up the phone.
But those were made up, as I recall the record.
I believe everyone but one was made up. And then he also testified, I believe the phrase that he used was multiple instances. But there were multiple times where he had attempted to contact the appellant to exercise his parenting time, and she wouldn't pick up the first, the second, the third time, and he had to try multiple times to call her. And he really is trying to the best of his abilities to exercise the parenting time that he does have with his child. And I know the appellant keeps mentioning that the child, of course, is 3, and it's hard to keep her focused on the phone. Both parties agreed to that. But the appellee found a way to work around the issues with the child's attention span, and he realized if he would read a book with his daughter over the phone, then she could look at the pictures on the page, he can ask her things about what's going on in the book, what the characters are doing, and that keeps her much more engaged and much more excited about phone calls. And he testified to multiple instances where he had arranged with the appellant beforehand to read a specific book with his daughter during his visitation, and the appellant just outright refused to make that book available. And then, of course, we have the issue where she's scheduling things such as going to the park or swimming, things like that, that are interfering with his parenting time. And the appellant knows when the appellee is going to exercise his parenting time because he arranges the phone calls with her ahead of time.
But doesn't he have to wait to make sure that there's a phone available for him to call?
Yes.
I mean, it's not a set moment. I'll call you at 4:15.
Yes, and it's my understanding that generally he'll work with her because he does realize she has a schedule. She has other things that she needs to do. And they just set up a general time, you know, Tuesday from 6 to 6:30 that he would call her. And he really has done everything that he possibly can to exercise his parenting time to the best of his abilities while he is incarcerated. And for whatever reason, the appellant just keeps interfering with that parenting time. And I think it's also important to note, whether we look at this as a removal or a modification, the motion to alter or amend, which we've already discussed, she filed that 8 days after the original decree was entered.
There's a 10-day window, right?
Yes, and, yeah. And I understand that. But Mr. Glover still had about 7 weeks of supervised parenting time that he could exercise with his daughter before he had to self-surrender. And it just defies logic to think that the appellant would allege that the visitation while my client was incarcerated that was ordered by the court, it doesn't make any sense for her to say, I know this isn't in my daughter's best interest before that parenting time has even been exercised. And that's just the consistent problem that we've had with this case. And also, I think it's important to note, originally the appellant had claimed that she didn't want the daughter to be stigmatized by my client's conduct here in Nebraska. That was not discussed in the appellant's brief at all, but I think that did make a difference to the court. I see that I'm out of time, and if there are no questions, we'll submit.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And the appellant is out of time as well, correct? Okay, so the case is submitted. Counsel is excused. Thank you.
You.